as the African National Congress sold its soul for cash. There's somebody who thinks so, and he's Dr. Charles Small, the founding director of the Institute for the Study of Global Anti-Semitism and Policy. Welcome, Doctor.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you.
According to your research, who have been the biggest buyers and owners of the African National Congress?
So it's a great question, and I don't pretend to have the definitive answer because I think, as you know, perhaps better than I, the politics in South Africa and the politics of the African National Congress are complex, and there's various fractions and interests, and some of it is open and some of it seems to be clandestine. So it's hard to get a grasp of really what's happening. But from our vantage point, yes, I think that the ANC has been bought and sold by pernicious forces. To me, the African National Congress, under the leadership of this, you know, of the stalwarts of Mandela, Tambo, Walter Sisulu, and of that generation, they, in my mind, really stood for social democracy and respect and having all South Africans equal under one legal system, regardless of race, of gender, of religion, of economic background, that they really were struggling for the creation of a social democracy. And for that party, the African National Congress, with that incredible legacy of not just political leadership, but of moral leadership, they were really a beacon of light for the world in their struggle for justice and to create a democracy. That for that party, with that legacy, to be working with and allied with the Iranian Revolutionary Regime and Hamas and even Hezbollah, regimes that, regardless of the Jewish and Israeli question, which is, of course, dear to me, I'm concerned about issues of anti-Semitism and the Jewish people and the future of the state of Israel. But setting that aside, the fact that the ANC is in bed with a regime that is based, their ideology is based on the destruction of democracy. They call for an end of democracy to replace it with an Islamist caliphate in which Jewish people need to be eliminated. They call for a genocide against Jewish people. They call for a subjugation of women, the silencing of women. And there is no recognition of the other in this Islamist political system that is out to replace democracy. And moreover, they are based on, and I'm choosing my words carefully, they take their anti-Semitism from Nazism. They take the protocols of the Elders of Zion, European Nazi ideology, and fuse it with a perversion of Islam. This is the Muslim Brotherhood. This is Iran. This is the ideology of Iran and Qatar and its offshoots. And for the African National Congress to be doing business with these interests is repugnant. Professor Elie Wiesel, who I started our research center ISGAP with, who was an incredible human rights activist, very active on the South African front through much of his life, on Cambodia, on Darfur, and being a witness to the Holocaust. He always taught us that anti-Semitism may begin with the Jewish people, but it never, ever ends with the Jewish people, that once this form of hate is unleashed, it knows no bounds. And we can see the Iranian Revolutionary Regime and Hamas preaching hatred based on Nazism. And I'll just say that it's, you know, its intellectual and philosophical leader, Sheikh Yosef Kawadawi, always preached throughout his life that the true believer, the true Muslim, is morally obligated to complete the work of Hitler. These Nazis not only targeted Jews, these Nazis also targeted Africans. They were racist. They were anti-Semitic. And of course, anti-democratic. And for the ANC to be aligned with this is shocking. And it's just, I would say, for money, for political expedience, it's really a tragedy.
What proof is there that funding from Iran and Russia are behind the actions of the ANC? Even if it didn't receive any money, would they not have taken that stance anyway because of historical ideological ties with some of these countries?
So I would argue that the historical and ideological ties do not go necessarily to Iran, to the Iranian revolutionary regime, and to Hamas. The African National Congress, under the leadership of Nelson Mandela and of that generation of leaders, always spoke about a two-state solution. They were certainly, they had good relations with the PLO, with Yasser Arafat. There was an alliance in the struggle against apartheid with the Palestinians. And I think that that history is clear. And from my perspective, calling for a two-state solution and working with Palestinians and Israelis, I would say it, you know, was a positive foreign policy of the African National Congress. But then to move from the PLO to the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas and the Iranian revolutionary regime to welcome Hamas on the red carpet, like Foreign Minister Pandor did many times, to travel to Iran, to travel to Qatar, to invite Hamas to South Africa, when never to distance themselves from Hamas when Hamas, based on its ideology, based on its constitution, in which it's based on Nazi ideology, literally. I'm saying this as a scholar. They've been calling for the extermination of Jewish people for decades. And then when they enact their ideology, when they enact their strategy on October the 7th of 2023 and massacre people in the greatest pogrom of the Jewish people since the Holocaust, when they engage in the systematic torture and the systematic sexual violation and rape of innocent civilians, and the ANC continues to court this terror organization, is repugnant. We now know that the Hamas movement tries to implement its ideology. They carried out a massacre, and the ANC is still in bed with them. Why? Why would they sell out their democratic principles to be in bed with an anti-democratic, genocidal terror organization? And I think the answer to me is they have good relations with Iran. Iran, as we know, uses Hamas as its proxy. And I think when Pandor and ANC dignitaries went to Iran and then they go to Qatar and then Hamas shows up on the doorstep of South Africa and the government and they're treated like royalty, and suddenly the ANC's deficit and debts are you know, mysteriously disappear, then there's certainly strong superficial evidence that there's something going on. The fact that Pandor has good relations, the fact that MK Kalahari is working also with sort of the Russian angle of this should give members of the African National Congress with such a profound legacy of fighting for democracy pause, that there's something wrong. And the ANC leadership needs to question itself. Do you want a quick fix for your financial troubles? Or do you want and rectify it slowly and methodically for a bright future? Or do you want to take bribes from anti-democratic entities that are diametrically opposed to the raison d'etre of the African National Congress? So it's really, you know, this is really a threat not to Israel and the Jewish people, although it is, as we see that was being played out in The Hague, this theater of the absurd. But this is really a threat to the domestic politics of South Africa. The ANC is being bought through corruption. They're selling out the goals of their brilliant legacy, and they're selling out their own people. They're not delivering on the promises to the average South African people, and their leaders are lining their pockets with money from anti-democratic, Nazi-inspired sources.
Do you think there's any chance that Israel could retaliate against South Africa for dragging it before the International Court of Justice?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if Israel has the capacity or the bandwidth at this point to focus on South Africa. But I will tell you, I'm based in the United States, and I know, you know, as Washington is preparing itself for the transition of the administration from the Biden administration to the Trump administration, I know that people throughout this new administration, and actually on both aisles, both in the Democratic and Republican Party, The fact that the African National Congress has paved the way for the Iranian revolutionary regime to join BRICS, and they're working with Russia, and they're working with Hamas, this is not going over very well in Washington. And I think that the African National Congress, you know, for a quick fix to line its coffers, its party coffers, is selling out the interests of South Africa. And democratic countries, the United States and other democratic countries, are deeply concerned about South Africa with its important strategic interests to the world, from its resources to its shipping, etc. It was the largest, perhaps the most important democracy in Africa, although now that's questionable. I think that the United States and other countries are very concerned about South Africa drifting into the Iranian and Russian orbit and selling out its democratic values. And I think in Washington, I'm hopeful in Washington, that this issue will be taken very seriously. And the South African people need to tell its leaders in the African National Congress that they better take into consideration the South African people's interest rather than their lining their pockets with some quick cash.
President-elect Donald Trump has already warned BRICS countries that they could expect 100% tariff if they try and challenge the dollar. How do you think his election could change the course of the war?
Of the war in the Middle East? Or, you know, so there's a level of unpredictability as we embark on the new administration. So I'm not a fortune teller. But I would say that from at least at this moment, that the new administration and the leaders that will be taking positions in security and foreign affairs, and President Trump himself, have been very clear on issues of Iran, that Iran has systematically used its proxies to create a ring of fire around Israel. The war that Iran launched on Israel was launched with Hamas on the eve of Israel and Saudi Arabia signing a peace agreement that would have ushered in an era of cooperation between Israel and most of the countries of the Middle East, the Abrahamic countries and others. It was really, we were on the cusp of something incredibly positive, not only for the Middle East, but for the world. And I think Iran was being pushed into a corner, so they attacked Israel on 7 fronts. And I think under the Trump administration, they are going to stand with Israel and Saudi Arabia and the Abrahamic countries to push back the Iranian revolutionary regime and its supporter of Russia. So I think how South Africa fits into this, I think the South African people need to decide, are they going to be on the side of the Iranian revolutionary regime or on the side of peace that will be breaking out, hopefully, in the region and on the side of the other democratic countries? And I know relations are not always perfect and everybody has competing interests, which is fine. But I think within the family of nations, within the family of democratic nations, there is space to deal with things in a humane manner, dealing with entities that are out to destroy democracy, out to exterminate Jews as they systematically state in their constitution and in their ideology, regimes who want to subjugate and literally silence women. Qatar and Iran have good relations with the Taliban. The Taliban, for example, made it illegal for women to go to school, and recently, incredibly, made it illegal for a woman to speak in public. Is this what the South African people want to be aligned with? Or do they want to strive for a stronger democratic society domestically and in the international community? And I think this is a moment when the South African people need to decide, because I believe that the world will not tolerate South Africa aligning itself with anti-democratic forces, aligning itself with Iran, which is a terror regime, and the like. So I think we're at an inflection point, and I hope the ANC, that the Democratic part of the ANC, will triumph over the corruption.
So you're suggesting that South Africa could expect payback coming from the US?
I can't predict the future, I say humbly, but I think that this situation, South Africa aligning itself with Iran and Hamas, I think they're going to be checked by democratic countries. I don't think this can go on. And I think the fact that South Africa used the struggle, the legacy of the struggle of their people who struggle for so many years and decades against an apartheid regime that was close to Nazi ideology, close to the ideology that exterminated the Jewish people in Europe, right? This is why I, as a young Canadian Jewish person, in the 1980s and 1990s, I became very, I say this humbly, it was a tremendous privilege to be the African National Congress, the chair of the African National Congress Solidarity Committee of Canada. I was in South Africa. I spent many years struggling against apartheid because this was the same ideology that decimated my grandparents' generation, who were Jews in Europe, right? This is the ideology that justified apartheid. And for the African National Congress to be now in bed with people whose ideology is based on that legacy of racist Nazism, that's the South African regime and the Muslim Brotherhood and Qatar, is really, it's to me, it's heartbreaking. And I think that I hope that the ANC and the people of South Africa will redouble of its efforts to fight for justice, to fight for a non-racialized society that has nothing to do with the Nazi ideology and that's been the bedrock of Qatar, Iran, Hamas, and the Muslim Brotherhood. And for the ANC to take this legacy and go to The Hague, being paid by these paymasters with this Nazi ideology, and then accuse the descendants of the Jewish people, who are also victims of racism and Nazism, and for two pieces of silver to sit in The Hague and accuse Israel of being an apartheid state, really? Is that what the people of South Africa endured for decades? Is Israel truly an apartheid state? Do people understand what Israel is, that Israel is a democracy, that Israel is a vibrant, multicultural, democratic society with a strong civil society, with incredible universities, with incredible technology and innovation, with music and food and culture from all over the world? Do South Africans really think that this is the apartheid that their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents were subjected to? This is what the ANC has been parading for two pieces of silver on a world stage. Not only selling out the Jewish people, but selling out the parents and grandparents of these South African leaders who endured such humiliation and such suffering under a racist apartheid regime. It's immoral at a level that it's hard to explain and to fathom.
I want to ask you, do you regard anti-Semitism as synonymous with anti-Israeli opinion?
So that's a good question. So there's the IRA definition. There are definitions that show the link between classical forms of anti-Semitism and what we call Israel bashing. So I think to be critical of Israel or Israeli policy is not necessarily anti-Semitic at all. You know, democratic countries, all countries should be subjected to insightful, critical thinking and debate, and we can disagree about policies. But if you take the Muslim Brotherhood, Iranian revolutionary Hamas view based on Nazism and European anti-Semitism, that the Jewish people don't have the right to self-determination in their homeland, yes, I would say that's anti-Semitism. And I think if any South African would pick up the Old Testament, the New Testament, or the Quran, we know where the Jewish people are from. We know where they have lived since the beginning of time immemorial. For over 3,500 years, the Jewish people have been present on the land. And if you pick up a holy book, It's clear. It doesn't speak about Palestine, by the way. It speaks about Israel. It speaks about Judea and Samaria. It speaks about the Jewish people in their homeland. And I would suggest to your South African listeners that perhaps the greatest successful decolonization project ever could be the establishment of the State of Israel. And if you think about it, Palestine was created by the Europeans, by the Romans, 2,000 years ago, the notion of Palestine. Israel predates Christianity, predates Islam. And the idea of Palestine was an insult that the Europeans placed on the Jewish people. And I think many of your listeners will understand this. To speak to your question in the contemporary context, we did a survey in Europe. We interviewed 10,000 people in 10 European countries, and we asked them a series of questions of classical forms of anti-Semitism and questions that we called Israel-bashing questions, that Israel is a Nazi state, that Israel is an apartheid state, that Israelis intentionally poison the water of Palestinians, very outlandish questions. And what we found in these 10 countries, that levels of classical forms of anti-Semitism were low, and also people who dislike Israel were relatively low. But what we found is that the people who dislike Israel or deemed Israel bashers based on our study, they are 13 times more likely to be anti-Semitic in the classical sense. So the correlation is off the charts. So if you can imagine in South Africa, there was a product in the pharmacy that was 13 times more likely to cause cancer than other forms of the same product. That product would be removed from the shelves, and there'd be a national inquiry of why this product causing cancer at such a high rate would be allowed to be sold in the pharmacy. So yes, there is a correlation. And I think we have to remember too that there are three types of anti-Semitisms. There's the religious form of anti-Semitism, the racist form of anti-Semitism that culminated in the Holocaust. And now there's an attack on who Jews are as a people, as a form of anti-Semitism. And although all three anti-Semitisms exist to some extent, Christian anti-Semitism, which is deeply rooted, racist anti-Semitism, which comes out of Europe and is now being perpetuated by Iran and Hamas and the Brotherhood, Qatar. There's also this attack on who Jews are as a people and our claim and our connection to the land of Israel. And to me, this is the most dominant form of anti-Semitism. And I think any person of goodwill knows that there is a deep connection of the Jewish people to the land, to Jerusalem, to Tzfat, to Hebron, to Caesarea, to Caesarea. So these roots are known in the New Testament and the Quran and the Old Testament. And Jewish people have created a democracy in Israel. It's not an apartheid state, it's a democracy. The Jewish people have rescued and brought African people. It's perhaps the first time and only time in history where a non-African entity brought Africans to freedom. Not to slavery and not to subjugation and not to live segregated in urban cities throughout Europe and North America, but to be free. And that's the airlifting, the military operation of the State of Israel to airlift Ethiopians, Ethiopian Jews, and other Africans coming to Israel to live in freedom. This is not the hallmark of an apartheid state. And this is not lip service in some secret PR campaign. Ethiopian Jews came home to their land. This is profound. And I think South Africans who know the Bible, I think could connect to what I'm saying.
Thank you very much. That was Dr. Charles Small, the founding director of the Institute for the Study of Global Antisemitism and Policy, speaking to BizNews. And I'm Chris Stain. Thank you.
Thank you very much.